You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Hello, friends, and welcome. So glad to have you here. I have as my guest Miss Melanie Boudreaux. She and I met when I messaged her on LinkedIn a few months ago. So you may recall I said that whenever I come across someone who is a leader in the community, whose first priority is to serve those around them, I'm going to try to get them on the podcast. Well, I loved what Miss Melanie was doing to help her students at my alma mater, where she is a professor. So I slid into her DMs, as they say. And the rest, as they also say, is post-pandemic history. Don't you think in the coming decades we're going to refer to the past as pre-pandemic and post-pandemic? Where you're telling a story and it'll be like, well, that was back before COVID. What's neat about that is it'll be universal. Unlike, say, 9/11. You can't really say back before 9/11 in Indonesia and they'll know what you're talking about, because they won't. But before the first lockdown, everybody will know what you mean. And the operative word there being first. Let's hope there's not another one. Melanie Boudreaux is an assistant professor at Nicholls State University, where she teaches human resource management. She's also faculty advisor for the Society of Human Resource Management and also works as a human resources director at Environment Safety and Health Consulting Services. She's now enrolled at University of South Alabama, where she'll soon finish her PhD in business management. She's married to Mr. Benny Boudreaux. They have six-year-old twins, which is actually the first thing we talk about today. Parenting. I haven't known Melanie a long time, but I feel like I've known her forever. And I'm sure that has to do with us being from the same part of the world. Well, that, and she has the same speech patterns as a blast from my past. Some of you listening will know exactly who I'm talking about. Some gals are so razor sharp that they often finish your sentence for you, and you might think, well, that's annoying. No, it's not. It's endearing. But the person I have in mind, who shall go unnamed, and today's guests are two of the hardest working, most energetic, and academically successful people that I know. And thinking back, I remember watching this other person have a conversation with one of her best friends, and it could have been a masterclass on the quickened brain and mind reading and just quick chatter. I must have listened to them talk for 20 minutes, and neither of them ever finished a sentence. It'd be like, but hey, gal, that little boy over there is, and then they both go, oh my God, so cute, at the same time. And then one would start a sentence, the other would get excited and jump in. Neither of them ever completed a thought. So you've heard me talk about the lost art of conversation, how it used to be this dance where you'd both be on the same page, and when you are, it flows like a babbling brook down the side of a mountain. Or as my good friend Fadu Baby, when I had him on, said, he was referring to driving an Audi A7, and he said, bruh, it drives like butter. So great conversation is like butter. It's a fun dance. But if you're not on the same page, it's like they're dancing hip-hop, which is what these girls would be doing with the fast maneuvers that they were pulling off. And you didn't get the memo, so you're doing the waltz while the other person's doing hip-hop. That's what happens when you're not on the same page. And it's all kludgy, and it's not fun to be a part of that conversation. But it takes Stephen Colbert-level quickness of thought to be able to do what my guest today can do. It takes a high level of focus and energy, which is why I found it so interesting to learn that my guest, I keep calling her my guest, her name is Melanie, she'll be at a slumber party among friends and be the first one to bed, even saying that she doesn't like to be without her car because when she's ready to go to bed, she's going to bed. And I believe that speaks to the energy expenditure required when you got the quick tongue to match the big old brain. But what do I know? These are my observations. Melanie and I, as I said, we discuss parenting. She has some excellent suggestions and tips for how you can ace your next job interview. We discuss texting etiquette, email etiquette, human nature. We get into where each of us falls according to the big five personality traits, whether we're neurotic or more or less disagreeable, high or low in trait openness, conscientiousness, etc. In fact, Melanie's research is really interesting. She's collected data to be analyzed on whether someone high in extroversion is more severely impacted by the negative effects of social media use, which we get into a bit also. And of course, fun questions at the end. All right, let's get to it, because I promise you this, you're going to like Melanie as much as I did. Please enjoy my chat with Miss Melanie Boudreau. Miss Melanie, thank you for being here.
You're welcome. I'm excited to be here.
You were telling my wife you have twins.
I do.
We have a tough time handling one. How do you handle two?
Oh my goodness. So the first 2 years, 2 to 3 years, was absolutely insane. They were, like I was telling you guys earlier, were on completely different schedules. One was on one 3-hour schedule. One was on another 3-hour schedule. And we just kind of divided and conquered. Thank goodness my mom lived about a block away, would ride her bike to my house.
That's so helpful.
Oh, yes. I was kind of telling him that can I tell the story of when I...
Please.
Okay. So I went to a doctor's appointment. It was like the first time that I had gone away from my kids. And it was about an hour into the doctor's appointment. And I got a few phone calls from my mom freaking out because she was watching the kids by herself. I was like, oh my goodness, she could handle it. So I just kind of kept pressing ignore because I needed a little break. And then I went get Chick-fil-A and I sat in my car, and it was the first time that I had stopped and actually ate a meal since I had them. And it was about, they were about a month old. And so I just remember like, oh my goodness, is this what my life has come to? And I was like, this is the only peace that I've had for a month and a half. But oh my goodness, now they are 6, about to turn 7 in a few weeks. And I am so blessed, and I couldn't imagine my life any other way. But the first 2 years, I'm not even going to lie, it was very difficult.
I can imagine. How long did your husband take off work?
Really, a few weeks, maybe. But my little girl slept all night from, like, day one, or like, right when we got home. She slept pretty much all night, like 6 hours, which I consider all night. And he doesn't really require a ton of sleep. So we would kind of just... At first, the first night we came home, we swaddled them, put them in this bassinet. We were thinking, okay, it's going to be great. Nope. Like 15 minutes later, one started screaming and then woke the other one up and they both are screaming. And we're like, oh my goodness, how do we adjust to this life?
I didn't even think about that. They must wake each other up all the
time. So we had to keep them in separate rooms at the beginning. Yeah.
Did you ever tell your mom that you declined her calls several times?
No, but she's going to hear about it now on this podcast, apparently.
I was watching,
sorry, Mary.
I was watching a YouTube video that
yes.
you did with a lady who said that she was a grandmother.
Yes.
I thought it was so funny that she was giving texting etiquette advice, because normally grandmothers aren't the first person you would choose to do that sort of thing.
And that is her, Miss Mary. That is my mom.
Oh, yeah. That's your mom.
That's my mom.
Oh, awesome. Okay. So
yeah.
One of the things I thought was hilarious was she said, be careful with personal texts. And then she gave an example, and her example was, she gets a text that says, hey, just letting you know that I'm in the hospital and I'm going home today. The doctor said my hemoglobin is low, so I needed to go straight to the hospital. And she was like, well, what am I going to do? She says, I can't call her since she's at the hospital, so let me just call her work to see what time she left work. And well, she answered the phone. And I was like, I thought you were at the hospital. So,
and that's her sister.
Yes. T. So her lesson in all this was, what she sent me was a screenshot. So be careful with your text.
Yes.
I'm like, oh
yes.
My God, that's something my mom would do.
Yes.
Get a screenshot. I also thought it was hilarious that her first thought was, I'm going to call her work. Like, that is so,
right.
That would be so foreign
right.
to me. But
well,
I
she's
thought
like,
so
she knows everybody that works there. Yeah. Actually, whenever I found out I was having twins, I FaceTimed her. Because I had just left the doctor, and the doctor was like, okay, you're not having one, you're having two. Because I knew I was pregnant. I did the blood work and everything, and they did the ultrasound, and they were like, oh, there's two. And I was freaking out. My husband mm-hmm. was so excited, and I was like, what is wrong with you? You're insane.
Mm-hmm.
And we FaceTime my mom, and, you know, when you answer a FaceTime, you would think that she's, like, in her home or in a private location. No, she was at her sister's work at the bank. And so everyone at Synergy Bank found out that I was having twins before the rest of my family knew, because my mom was on FaceTime and she started screaming. Yeah.
Awesome. Small town stuff.
Small town. Yeah. Thibodeau.
She also said, be mindful when you send emails.
Yes.
She said that she had received a business email like at 4:30 in the morning on a Sunday. And she was like, I'm not going to reply at 4:30 on a Sunday.
Right.
And I was thinking, I don't know that they were expecting you to reply at 4:30. So some of her stuff was great. Y'all did this hierarchy of communication, but some of it made me laugh out loud. LOL.
It's true. And I have kind of thought to be more mindful of that because I am an early bird. So I wake up at 5 o'clock and I check my emails and I drink my coffee or whatever. And so I send these emails. I used to send these emails out and I was like, and then people would call me at 6 or 7 freaking out. And they were like, oh my gosh, I just saw your, and
so people feel compelled.
They do.
To reply.
Especially now after COVID, I find that people more are now always on their phones, always emailing. Because that's how we've been communicating mostly through COVID.
Yeah.
And so I find that it's even more so now. People feel like a response and urge more than ever.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm usually better about this, of not seeing things through my own perspective. But I am so wired to not give a shit what time they've emailed me that they need to expect that I'm not going to get back to them until business hours.
I love that thought. But not a lot of people think
that. They feel compelled to reply as soon as possible. They get antsy and nervous.
And my dissertation chair, he only works at night. And so he only sends emails at 2:30 in the morning. And when I first got an email from him, I'm like, what is going on? Is this how he works? Is at 2:30 in the morning. And that's how he sends his emails. But I love it because he sends it to me. And then I have the whole day to work on it. And I know he's not going to look at it until at night. So then I send it to him at night. And then he checks it. And then he sends it back.
Did you ever contact the virtual assistant that I sent to you?
I did, and I'm so excited. I'm making my list of things that I want to start. Yes.
Because the cool thing about having a virtual assistant in the Philippines is that they're about 6 hours behind. So when you wake up in the morning, whatever you want
done
is in your inbox. It's really cool.
Yes. Very, very excited about that.
Another thing she said was she made a list of words not to use in a professional setting. The only one that I recall that I didn't think was a huge problem, but she seemed to think so, was no problem. I found that interesting. So when somebody thanks you, ideally you would say you're welcome. But she said people are turned off by no problem. Why is that?
Okay, so I've been more conscious of this since she told me about this too, because when you say no problem, it's almost like you're dismissing what you've done for the other person. Not that you need the other person to go above and beyond and do all this stuff for you, but it's a reciprocal. You need to say you're welcome, because if you went out of your way to help somebody and then you say no problem, it's almost like dismissing what you've done to yourself internally too.
Agree.
So I am more conscious of it and say you're welcome, because I also think that you should own what you've done to help that person. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. I agree. Something else that was said on this video. I like the video.
Oh, good. I'm glad you like it.
53 minutes. I'll link to it in the show notes. Because it's good information to have, because so many of us are working from home and doing Zoom meetings, and people don't know proper etiquette for this sort of thing. It's all kind of new to us. I'm a big believer in you have to manage your boss. And so one of the ways that I would manage my boss is by never setting the precedent that I was available between 8 p.m. and 7 a.m. I think once you do it, the rest of your career, you'll be doing that sort of thing. Is sipping coffee okay on a Zoom meeting?
So, I love that question. It depends on who you're with in the Zoom mini. So if you are on an interview, I would not recommend that you pull out a coffee cup and just chill and sip coffee. And I know right now I have sunglasses on my head, and I can tell you guys a story about a student that had sunglasses on his head for an interview. But you don't want to look too casual, especially on an interview, especially if it's with your boss. If you're in a financial meeting, no. You need to show, the nonverbal communication will come across in a Zoom meeting. Not as much as if in person, face to face, but on Zoom, they can see, are you paying attention? I can see if you're clicking through different screens, the light changes on your face in Zoom. So I could be oh, he's not paying attention. He's online shopping. You know what I mean? So you want to make sure that you're as attentive as possible. So I probably would not sip coffee unless if it's a friend's, coworkers, peers that you're really comfortable with, then yeah, I would.
I was just thinking about Jeffrey Toobin. Is that something that y'all discuss in class?
No, tell me.
Jeffrey Toobin was the CNN anchor that was caught with his pants down, touching himself.
Yeah. On and he thought he was off of Zoom. He thought the video was off of Zoom.
Yeah.
Yes. I had a student on a jet ski in Zoom. So last fall, we switched to all online classes for COVID. So this was about a year ago. And I had a student. He was on a jet ski. And I think he was doing it, obviously, to be funny. But I was like, what are you on his video on his jet ski zooming into class? I'm like, there's no way you were paying attention. No way you were paying attention.
Well, there's software now that can sift through the folks on the Zoom call and determine how much people are paying attention.
Really?
And then they'll send a report to the boss.
Do you know the name of the software?
I don't.
Okay. I need to look this up.
It may just be in beta for all I know, but
we did
that
have,
sort of thing is coming.
I did have a student tell me, this was not in my class, thank goodness. She actually went to another university, but their class was on Zoom. And she said that someone in her class forgot, supposedly, I don't know if this is true, forgot his camera was on and went up to, like, I guess go to the bathroom or whatever and had a towel on. And yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah. So I'm thankful that that did not happen in my class or that I know of.
Do you know anybody that uses software other than Zoom nowadays? Zoom has become
a
verb.
So
like Google.
Some of our, like, 401k meetings and benefits meetings, they'll use Google Meets, which I'm not really a fan of anything but Zoom. I hate to say that, but I've just become so used to it.
Yeah, when you send a Google Calendar invite, they include a Google Meet.
Meets, yeah. Link. So maybe that's why.
Yeah.
Just easier. Same software.
Zoom stock has really taken off. You could have got
Zoomed.
Sucker at IPO.
Sorry.
Why I invited our friends.
Dad jokes.
It's funny. I've been singing this song to my daughter that goes, I love the boogie nights. And I do my my fingers like guns and kind of point them out and dance. And my wife makes fun of me for
doing this?
Dad. No, I don't think so. Well,
no.
Who knows? But
I'm going to have to ask her.
For doing dad dances. It just happens when you get older. You just start doing that kind of stuff. I try to stay relevant. I still listen to rap music, but I'm going to pull out the oldies
from time to time.
I listen to all of it. I'm on DaBaby and the new stuff.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Do you know who DaBaby is?
No, but I'm proud of you.
Yeah. You've never heard the song Rockstar?
No. Are you Googling
it? I'll send you a link.
Okay, good.
No. Okay, so on the top of the communication hierarchy is face-to-face communication.
Yes.
Do you think our interpersonal skills are diminishing?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Yes.
Why do you say that?
Because now everything is text message. Everything is email. Everything is, I mean, and I know COVID obviously has not helped with this, but just eye contact, like, and handshakes. I mean, obviously we couldn't shake hands for COVID, right? But just the way people interact with each other, the interpersonal skills I feel like have been lacking even before COVID, because texting. And online and social media and everything is online. So much is online now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even pick up the phone and call my best friends anymore. I mean, it's mostly text. And even if we're going to chat on the phone, we'll send each other a text and
to
ask
say,
if we can chat.
When can we chat? Yeah.
And I have a problem, too, with people who call when it's convenient for them. Like, we all have that friend who only calls when they're on their way home from work.
Yeah.
And they never give any thought or consideration to what you're doing.
Right. So, maybe I'm feeding the baby or whatever.
Right. Yeah, I actually had to tell my best friend, Chase, if you're listening, he called me like 5 times in a row and I was not able to take the call.
Damn it, Chase.
And yeah, I told him, dude, I need you to text me. Like, give me a heads up. Say, hey, can you chat in 20 minutes or whatever?
Right.
And we'll make sure that it happens.
Right.
But I've seen things recently, surveys and stuff, that say young people don't like to be put on the spot.
Right.
Which they believe a phone call is being put on the spot because they don't have that time to react and think what they want to say.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So like my babysitter, if she listens to this, I love you. I was texting her the other day and then I like pick up the phone because I was like, it's too long to text. I'm just going to call. And she didn't answer. I'm like, she just texted me. But they just don't like, and I don't know, she might have had something going on, but I just find that's very common. Even with my cousin, Maggie, she is just like, she will not answer your call, but she will text you right back.
people feel like it's invasive now. Like, you're invading my space to call them. Ring my phone.
Yeah.
And who answers a call now from a number that they don't recognize?
No, I don't.
That doesn't even happen anymore, right?
Correct.
You get a lot of bogus calls?
Yes.
I get text messages every day from somebody wanting to buy a house that I own. It's every single day.
Really?
Yeah.
How did they get your number?
I have no idea. I guess I'm on a list somewhere.
You must be.
But it's smart, I guess, because if you're going to get a deal on a house, you want to get to them prior to them going officially on the market or being foreclosed on, headed to short sale. And if you can just mass text a list of homeowners, that's awesome. I hope people don't fall for it. Every once in a while, I'll reply and say, okay, if you got 200K, we can talk. And, you know, the house would be worth like 160 or something. And they go away.
Mm-hmm.
But it's crazy how often I am spam texted.
Oh, yeah. And called.
Yeah. It's getting out of hand.
Yes, I just don't answer.
I had a buddy who was telling me the other day that he was at a restaurant and there were two young girls, probably 18, 19, behind the counter. And they were like hostesses at this diner. And he struck up a conversation with them. Were y'all closed during COVID? How long have you been working here? Just a casual conversation. And he said when he walked away, he turned around and looked at them and they were like gawking, like tongues to the ground. And I told him, I said,
why?
You know why that is? It's because young guys can't do that. Young guys
can't have a conversation. Right.
Yeah.
I get that.
So a young girl is enthralled by an older man. I mean, this guy was my age, basically.
Who can actually have a conversation.
These girls were like 18, 19, and they're like, I love this guy. He just had a conversation
with me. He just actually had a conversation with me, yeah.
Crazy how easy it is to separate yourself nowadays as a young man.
Very true.
I love what you do to help your students prepare for the real world.
Thank you.
I got to witness it firsthand when I came down to visit you guys.
Yes.
Do you do mock interviews with them?
I do.
That is so cool. That is so beneficial.
We do them face-to-face, and we also do them online. Because right now, a lot of the interviews have been Zoom. Before you get, you don't even get to physically go to the company right now with COVID and everything. So a lot of times, we are doing Zoom interviews just for the first part. And then if we feel like we'll call one or two in to actually interview them. And so we practice face-to-face interviews with my students and we do Zoom interviews as well. And we record them and the whole class watches. So yeah, no, they hate it at first.
Yeah.
But then I get so many emails like, I need to show you some of them. And I just start crying because they are like, thank you so much. I got this job. I would have never known what to do. Like, I have goosebumps talking about it. Like, I would have never known what to do. And I know it's not all me, but it's a lot of it is just practice and just putting themselves out there. And so before we watch them on the big screen in my class, I tell them this is like a safe space. Like, you don't make fun of anybody. This is not what this is for. This is for you to mess up right now so you can actually get the job that you really want and you're not messing up in that interview. Because you have, I think they said, 7 seconds to make a first impression? Like, research has shown as little as 7 seconds.
I believe it.
And it takes up to 20 positive subsequent impressions to reverse one negative first impression. So if you mess up at the beginning, they've written you off. So I'm trying to let my students not get written off, and then they get to make the decision as to where they want to work.
7 seconds.
Yeah.
So I often give advice to young men who are seeking a suitable mate.
Okay.
And they're curious as to what they should say. And I always tell them, it doesn't matter what you say. What you say is probably the least important thing.
As little as 7% are the actual words that you say.
Oh, that makes sense. So 93% is nonverbal.
Correct.
You hear that, fellas? And if it works out, neither of you are going to remember what was said initially anyway.
Oh, I do remember what my husband first told me.
What did he say?
He told me I had something in my teeth.
And did you?
I hated him. I did. And I was actually going on the interview, which I'm so thankful that he told me this. But yeah, he told me you have something in your teeth. And that was the very first thing he's ever told me.
Wow.
Yeah. Thanks, Benny. Yeah. Normally you don't.
Yes. Yeah, people are usually embarrassed by the early days of their relationship. I had a girl one time. I was laughing at something that was said in our early texts, and she grabbed my phone and deleted our entire chat history. And I was like, oh, I liked having that. But it's easy to see how one would be embarrassed by what's said in the courting phase when you eventually...
Versus, yes. Yeah.
So is interviewing a skill set?
Yes, I think it can be learned. I think it definitely can be improved upon and learned. But I also think a lot of it is nonverbal communication training. Your tone of voice is also nonverbal, too. So the way you sit, the way you hold yourself, your posture, eye contact, obviously, the way you shake somebody's hand. Like, I don't know if you've ever had a bad handshake, but that could ruin, like, or the people that crush your hand, or they are too soft. I hate when somebody, like, tries to shake my hand and they don't think that, like, I'm strong enough to shake somebody's hand. And I'm like, okay, thanks. You know, you should have a good handshake. You should have good posture. I think that all of that can be improved upon. The way you dress for an interview is so important. We talk about that. And Nichols has this great program where on the third floor of the College of Business, we've had people that donate suits and shirts and ties and clothes. And all of our students that are College of Business majors get a whole outfit. If like they can go and shop basically. And so we call it our business closet, but they will be ready for interviews because they have shoes, they have ties, they have everything up there that people have donated, new or gently used. Some of them still have like tags on them. And so our students don't have to like go to Walmart or you know, JCPenney or wherever. We provide that for them.
That's like the ante or the stepping up to the plate to be like everybody else. How do you then make yourself stand out?
I think by following up, I have my students write handwritten thank you notes. They wrote you some.
Yes, I loved it.
Yes.
Made my day. Made my week.
All of my speakers that come in, we practice and how to write a good thank you note. And look, if you don't have time to write an actual letter, I have them send an email. But we talk about how to send an email, how to follow up. And I think just showing that you're going to go the extra mile and being confident in yourself. So I think that that's what's kind of lacking is people not really being able to express what they can do for the company. And so I think that that's going to make them stand out. And I'm going to choose that candidate over someone else that's done research on our company, that knows our values and knows what they can bring to the table to fit in and make our company better. And so I try to help them write their cover letters in a way that is like, this is me and this is what I can bring to you guys to make you guys better. Because they're going to have to sell themselves because, like you said, everybody's going to dress professionally, hopefully. But some don't. You would think that would be.
Everybody's going to embellish on their resume a little bit.
I don't say lie. I don't think you should lie at all on your resume. But you need to let your resume be a very good representation of yourself, your best self. Because that's what you're bringing on an interview is supposed to be your best self.
And should you always have a cover letter?
No, not necessarily. But it always help. It would help if they ask for that. Like, so if they just say upload a resume, you don't necessarily have to upload a cover letter. But I would, a lot of times I tell them, take your cover letter, copy it, and put it in the subject of the email. I mean, in the body of the email. Does that make sense? So they not ask for a cover letter, have something prepared to be like, this is why I should work here.
I had another gal on, Nicole Rodriguez. She was the CEO of a PR firm. And when I asked her what young people struggle with the most, she said written communication.
Yes.
Is that what you're finding too?
Yes. That's one of the things, along with the nonverbal soft skills that I try to work with them on. But the written communication part, I work with my students on how to send an email. And if you watch that netiquette video as well, we talk about it on there.
That email was very good. So I'm always surprised to see young people start an email with Melanie and then I whatever. No, you've got to
Mr.
have
hi,
hello.
Hello, how are you?
And then you've got to skip a line after
right.
the comma.
Right.
And she talked about having bullet points, which is so important because your email is going to be scanned before it's read.
Yes.
And so you want to make it easily scannable.
Yes.
And if you have questions, make them stand out. I always encourage people to put the question at the end, no matter what else you say. If you say at the end, can you get this proposal signed by the end of the week? That is compelling. They're going to probably reply to your email. And I tell people this a lot, too, that the email that gets opened the most has thank you in the subject title. So these little tips are invaluable, and I'm so glad to hear that you're helping college students to prepare, because I don't know where else they would get that sort of thing.
Me either. And so I tell them, share the netiquette video with your friends, people that aren't in college, whoever. Share it with your mom, dad, whatever. I think because it talks about like even texting tips, and I think it's just so invaluable because especially, like, I don't know if you've ever worked with somebody that I would have to scroll 3-4 times down this email page. And it was paragraphs of stuff that I'm like, what is he asking me? Like, I'm so confused. And he would send it to so many people. And I'm like, I don't even read him anymore because I don't know what he wants. And I just pick up the phone and call him because I'm like, okay, what do you need me to do? Tell me what this is. Sum this email up for me.
Yeah. People often don't think strongly enough about how something's going to be received mm-hmm. by the other person.
Mm-hmm.
They're just too wrapped up in themselves to be that other directed, like, okay, if I were reading this, is it clear what it is they're asking me to do?
Right. And she says in there, read it over a few times to yourself out loud or have somebody else read it over, especially if it's a really important email.
Yes.
And you're, you know, really wanting something to get communicated, then yeah, make sure you go over that.
Yes. And there are writing courses that you can take, because internet writing is different from what the writing was that you were taught in school. As an example, the two spaces after a period has gone the way of the dinosaur because of internet writing. So now it's more common to see only one space after a period. Another example would be your paragraphs should be kept to about 2 or 3 sentences. You don't want to have a paragraph with 8 sentences. Little things like that.
Agreed, especially in an email.
What more can you tell us about texting? Has that changed? One of the things I like to say is, I tell people, is that when texting started, when I was like 20, it was not cool to text with another dude. So you talked to dudes and you would text with girls.
Really?
Yeah. That's how far we've come. I mean, things have changed a lot.
Wow. Just some texting tips. I would not text your boss unless if they text you first. I would not text just like, I mean, somebody that you're looking to interview with, like that should not, unless if they text you first. And she says on the video, you know, ask, you know, can I text? Because I know one of our salespeople, this was years ago, not where I'm at right now. Our salesperson texted like an older client. And he had a multi-million dollar account with us. And he got so mad, he almost pulled all of his business from us because the salesperson sent a text message instead of picked up the phone and called him.
Whoa.
And it wasn't like a big like conversation. It just like, you know, hey, I'll see you here then or whatever. But that older man. So, I mean, I think you need to also look at the generations, too. I mean, I know things are becoming more tech savvy, but you don't want to send a text whenever it could mess up a multi-million dollar account.
I always felt like once you got into a texting relationship with a boss or a customer, that was where you wanted to be.
Right,
so
right.
View that as something to aspire to.
Right, right.
And hopefully they do it to you first. Yeah,
yes.
Especially if you're the subordinate in that situation.
Correct.
Anything else that people can do to make themselves stand out on an interview, whether it be on a Zoom call or in person?
So I have this one story of one of my students went through my classes. He did the mock interviews and he was up against this other candidate who was not from Nichols. This other candidate had more experience than him, had a higher degree than him. And the other candidate came into the interview with sunglasses on his head. And the boss told him, so my student got the job. And it was like a $70,000 job, which is a great job for somebody like right out of college. Like normally that's not what they make. But he had been like an intern there. They knew him. Got the job over the other person because they said that the other person looked too relaxed. And he had sunglasses on his head and he did not look like he really wanted this job. Mm-hmm. And my student did. And so he called me and he was like so excited. And I was like, yeah, you know, like that's the stories that I'm like, okay, thank goodness, because he would have missed out on an awesome offer. That's a $70,000, putting sunglasses on your head, $70,000 a year.
What's unfortunate is you usually don't get honest feedback when you don't get a job.
Correct.
So he was told that he had sunglasses on his head.
They did tell him that that's why he didn't get the job.
That's so good to know.
Yeah.
And even when you get feedback, it's usually BS. So it's one of the reasons I encourage people to mock interview. If you don't have a coach or a professor who will help you, get a buddy and just tell him that you'll do the same for him when he's
looking for a job. I recommend videoing it too, because you can pick stuff up. Like somebody was like tapping their foot and they didn't realize that they were tapping their foot. Somebody was chewing gum and they were like, oh my goodness, I didn't even realize I had gum in my mouth, and they were smacking, and like somebody else had said something about it. And so that's why we watch it in front of the whole class, because even the class picks up stuff that I don't pick up on. And I'm like, oh my goodness, they did do that. I didn't even realize. But I had one guy come talk in my class. I don't know if you know Jonathan Terrell, JT.
I do.
He's amazing.
Yeah. I emailed with him yesterday.
No way. So he taught me in high school. I taught his daughter at Nichols. And now he is the athletic director at Nichols. Anyway, long story short, he came and talked in my SHRM group before he was athletic director, which is my student group, Society for Human Resource Management. I have about 50 students in that group, and we were talking about interviews, and he said, this was when he was a pharmaceutical sales rep, and he said, if I am interviewing somebody and they have chipped fingernail polish, he says, I dismiss it, like dismiss them right away. He said, they don't look like they're put together. And so he always told his daughters that they need to make sure that their fingernails are either like clean, they have nothing on them, or, you know, have them fixed nice. Because he said, if you're not paying attention to that little detail, then we don't want you working here. Now, look, I might be misquoting him, so don't take it out on me, JT. But I think that that means so much, because it's true. You don't know what somebody else is going to look for. So you don't want to give anybody a reason to rule you out. You want to be the one that makes the decision on if you want to work there or not.
Yes. Do you talk about leverage at all? Do y'all get that far into it, like negotiating multiple offer situations?
We do. And a lot of times it's very, very specific to that situation. So they'll call me after. Like it's more of like I've created the relationship with them where if something comes up like that, they can reach out to me. And so we talk about it. And so this one student, Alexis, she just recently had two job offers or three maybe. And it was like all at one time. And I was like, you need to make sure that you are feeling, you know, feel out which one you want, which one that's most right for you. And don't necessarily, I mean, money isn't necessarily everything. I know you talk about money and finances and all the time, but you want also to like where you work and love going to work and not absolutely hate it. And so I know that money is not necessarily the number one motivator.
Well, and it shouldn't be for people that age. I assume you're working primarily with 22, 23, 24 year olds.
Yes.
Yeah, you want to work to learn
and grow and know where you're. Yeah, yeah. She called me and, you know, I kind of helped them. How would you handle this? And actually, you asked about, you know, how would you stand out, right, on an interview? And one of my students, this was maybe a few weeks ago, they emailed me and they said, how would you answer this question? The question was, why should we hire you? How would you answer that?
That is a great question. It is always asked.
Always. We always ask this question.
Be prepared to overcome objections.
So how would you answer that?
With what you're dealing with is a lot of what I'm dealing with, which are younger folks, and the objection is almost always that they don't have experience.
Correct.
So I would give the same answer whether they're using it as a negotiating gambit, which you can't know for sure. But a lot of times hiring managers will say, I have guys on my team that have 15 years experience, mm-hmm. so I can't pay you X. Mm-hmm. If that guy's been in the corporate world for a while, he knows that the guy who has 15 years experience is that often means nothing. Mm-hmm. You would much prefer a guy who has 6 years experience or 3 years experience. A lot of times they're hungrier, they're mm-hmm. more motivated, mm-hmm. they've got more energy. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question, I would tell them that I'm so big on habits and routines mm-hmm. that I encourage people to say things like, I'm someone who. So, for example, the habits and routines that I've developed through the years have greatly benefited every organization I've been a part of.
Great.
And then you can talk about what those are, whether it's baseball or Boy Scouts. Then talk about those habits. Like, for example, my work day doesn't start until it's finished on paper. So when I wake up in the morning, all of my tasks are there. And the ones that I tackle first are the most difficult. So if there's a difficult conversation to be had, I once read a book called Crucial Conversation. You know, like mix in these little
and be very specific.
Nuggets. Yeah. I want to do those things first, because a lot of times when my peers are starting to drag a little bit at 2 p.m., I'm going downhill full speed because I manage my energy well. My habits and routines are in place to where I can put my head to the pillow at night and I'm worried about three things. Was my day productive? Did I do what I said I was going to do? Did I serve others? And if I did all those things, then I know it was a good day. Most people are just trying to get through the day. I'm someone who strives to get from the day.
And this is how I'm going to make your company better, you know, by bringing this to you.
Yes. If I come to work for you, I'll be on time. Mm-hmm. I'll work extra hard and I'll make you proud. I want to be on your team.
Love it. And so I kind of similar, very, very similar, is I kind of typed something up for, because he was like, oh my gosh, I don't know why I'm, you know, and he had never taken my class. This was his girlfriend had taken my class. And so she was like, help. So I kind of typed up a little something and I was like, obviously you need to tailor this to who you are as a person, but you would want to say like, these are my personal values and these values match your company values to show that you've done research on their company. I have the keys that you guys are looking to hire with these values. You want somebody who's honest, trustworthy, has respect for others. And this is what I have. And this is how I have shown this throughout my life. And like you said, give examples. And it doesn't have to be something major. Just kind of let them know that you're not BSing them. I know with time and training, I will deliver on these promises and I'm a go-getter. Like, this is why you should hire me over somebody else's, because I'm a go-getter, right? And so you can mold me to what you want. Versus somebody that's been here for 15 years, and that's going to be harder to change them.
Yeah, because being coachable is so important. So that question that you posed is probably going to be one of the later questions. So I'd like to think that some of that was probably brought up, but you can really tie it all together at the end with what you're saying. I like that. And usually it's made easy for you because they put a job description out.
Yes.
And so you just match your talents to that job description.
Yes. And I tell people, tailor your resume to that job description. So like if they have what they're looking for in that job posting, that they're looking for a passionate, creative, whatever, you put that those exact words on your resume because that's what they want.
Yep.
And usually the person that wrote that job posting is the HR person that's going to be hiring you.
Yeah.
And so that's exactly what they're looking for. Don't miss that opportunity.
So in my sales career, what I tried to do was develop a champion in the account, which just means somebody that's going to go to bat on your behalf. So I would have to get them to different departments within the organization. But the same concept goes if you're selling a product or you're selling yourself.
Yes.
Build a champion, somebody that really likes you in the account, and then they can talk you up better than you can ever talk yourself up.
Yes.
Energy is important, right?
Yes, very. They can't see me smiling.
Talk about energy a little bit.
Okay, so I tell my girls this often that I work with. Smile when you answer the phone, even, because people can feel that. You know, smile. And people can feel your energy even through a phone call, right? And a lot of times, even in a text message, I recommend if it's a friend or if it's somebody that you've on that texting basis with, put an appropriate emoji in there to let them know that you are smiling, or just put a ha-ha or whatever, because sometimes people can read okay as you, just the two letters, okay. Some people absolutely hate that. They think that you're mad and they don't know what's going on. But if you put okay smiley face, they're like, oh, they're fine.
Such a good point. This is one of the things that I think has changed through the years, along with it used to be uncool to text with guys, but it used to be among my friends.
I'm glad you've gotten over that.
Yeah, right. It used to be among my friends that we knew each other and would consider each other's personality when something was said. And therefore, you don't need to put a laughing face or a ha-ha or an LOL after what you say. But I remember the first time I did this, I was emailing with somebody I worked with, a female, and knew that it could have been misconstrued. And we obviously had a good relationship. We had worked together several years. But I had a sentence that I replied and put LOL after the sentence. And I thought, I'm probably going to be doing this the rest of my life.
You probably will. Yeah.
But that's changed. I think because so much of communication, most of communication nowadays is written, that has totally changed the game to where a lot of people are going from an Instagram message to their email, to their text,
yes,
to Twitter DMs.
Yes.
And so you don't have time to consider, well, what did Mel? I know Melanie, so
yes,
she wouldn't say that. No, they're just going from screen to screen to app to app,
right,
to PC and replying real quick. I mean, if you've ever watched a 17-year-old girl on the bus deal with 8 different conversations at once, it is amazing. And I can promise you she's not taking time to consider whether
or not
you intended to be funny.
No way. No way.
Crazy.
Great points. I agree.
Okay. I was reading something that Mickey Smith said, PhD professor of management.
That is one of my professors. He's actually on my dissertation committee, yes.
Okay, he was discussing a scholarship you recently received.
I did.
And he said, you are a perfect candidate for this award. You're an exemplary doctoral student with a high level of intellectual curiosity backed by years of real-world experience. So let's talk about each of those, intellectual curiosity.
That's a lot of big words.
Your real world experience. So intellectual curiosity, I looked up the word.
I did too, because you Googled it. You said, I'd like to talk about intellectual curiosity. And I was like, let me just Google this just to make sure that we're on the same page.
That's awesome. I Googled the word mendacious yesterday.
What is that?
And do you know? Well,
no, I don't, obviously.
I'm going to give you the definition first.
Please do.
Because this
mendacious
amazed me. Mendacious means not telling the truth or lying. Hold on, that was a default search engine that I don't normally use.
I literally asked my 6-year-old this morning, do you know what honesty is? Tell me what that means. And they're like, it's like when you're honest. I was like, okay, well, tell me, like, what is, I don't know, Mom, that's a hard question. I'm like, okay, because I just wanted to see if they could, like, actually articulate what that meant.
That's so interesting.
They can't.
You know what makes you likable, in addition to the other qualities, is that most people wouldn't tell a story that reflected negatively on their kids because they'd be so concerned that people would think their kid is stupid or whatever.
No.
I like that kind of thing. Okay, mendacious, given to or characterized by deception or falsehood or divergence from the truth or from absolute truth is what it says. Do you know that there's a picture of Donald Trump next to this? Can you believe that? You know, the joke used to be if you looked up the word idiot in the dictionary, there'd be a picture of whoever next to it.
Wow.
This has become real. You Google the word mendacious and Donald Trump's picture is next to it. I couldn't believe
that. Why did you Google that word, though? Like, what made you? We don't know.
I was reading.
Okay.
Came across the word in the book.
You would be shocked at the amount of journal articles that I've read for my PhD program. And I'm like, I have no freaking clue what this word is. And I've Googled so many words because that has helped me just get through an article, get through a paragraph. But I've never heard of mendacious. That's interesting. Wow.
Can you believe?
No.
I can't either.
I mean, I can.
I know. Intellectual curiosity is curiosity that leads to an acquisition of general knowledge. It can include curiosity about such things as what objects are composed of, the underlying mechanisms of systems, mathematical relationships, languages, social norms, and history. It can be differentiated from another type of curiosity that does not lead to acquisition of general knowledge, such as curiosity about the intimate secrets of other people. I guess that would be gossiping? I don't know. So, this guy thought enough of you to say that you were intellectually curious. Is that something you've always had?
Yes. It's even to my detriment. My brain never stops. And I kind of told you this earlier. I don't know why, but I just am always, I feel like maybe it's just me. I don't know. But I feel like I'm a lifelong learner. Like I kind of want to be. Like that's, I feel like I can always improve and always grow. So I listen to, I think I shared with you, a lot of podcasts. I listen to, I read a lot of self-help books. Most of them are on mindfulness. And just, I know, so you guys talked about this on the last podcast, and I was just thought that was so interesting because that's kind of where I am right now. But I've always wanted to make myself better. always. And so I know I'm far from perfect, way far from perfect, but I feel like we were kind of put on this earth to grow and help others. And so if I'm not growing, then what am I doing? So I feel like I'm very always wanting to find out more. I ask a lot of questions, probably to Mickey Smith was what he was like saying, because she probably asked so many questions, but I just want to understand. I really, then that's what my research is a lot about, is about people. And I really want to understand why people think the way they do and why they do the things they do. That's what I'm most interested in, especially how that carries out in the workplace. And so my dissertation topic is on people's personalities, and it's actually on social media. And I studied a healthcare facility, a hospital. I looked at their employees. They allowed me to survey their employees for my dissertation. And I looked at how social media and how people's personalities are interacting in the workplace, especially in the middle of COVID. I'm working through that data right now. So I'll share my results with you as soon as I get them.
The same location that I got this definition of intellectual curiosity, it says, in antiquity, the Roman philosopher Cicero wrote about our innate love of learning. He said, so great is our innate love of learning and of knowledge that no one can doubt that man's nature is strongly attracted to these things, even without the lure of any profit. For my part, I believe Homer had something of this sort in view in his imaginary account of the songs of the sirens. Apparently, it was not the sweetness of their voices or the novelty and diversity of their songs, but their professions of knowledge that used to attract the passing voyages. It was the passion for learning that kept men rooted to the sirens' rocky shores.
Very cool.
Very cool. I'm a big fan of Charlie Munger, who's like a 93-year-old billionaire, investor, philanthropist, lawyer. He is a student of Cicero. So much we can learn from the
Charlie
old
school. Munger. I'm taking a lot of notes.
Yeah, Charlie Munger is Warren Buffett's right-hand man.
Okay, I remember you talking.
Those guys, they just read all day, and they make big, concentrated bets on people. So they study human behavior, too.
That's fun to me.
People and companies.
Big smile. You can't really see, but that's fun to me.
Me, too. I like to think of myself as a student of human behavior and why people behave
do the things they do. Yeah.
Have you researched how strong the sex drive is, for example, that somebody like Bill Clinton could throw the presidency away over that urge?
No.
That's always fascinated me.
I think my dissertation chair would frown upon that if I add that into my research.
Yeah. Yeah. There are just some urges so strong that people would throw away everything, and that's so interesting. Throw away their family and their job and even the presidency of the United States.
I never even really thought about it like that. Yeah. What throws people off course? So I'm listening to the Bible in a Year podcast. That one, I'm just like shocked at the amount of things that have happened over the years that like we still see happening today. Like people in family fighting. I feel like it's this human pattern of behavior, the way people have been acting. Like obviously we're not, you know, as barbaric as back in the day, but I just find it interesting to see like the similarities and the parallels of even just today from years and years and years ago.
Yeah, because human nature doesn't change.
Hasn't changed that much. I mean,
I think we still have it in us to be barbaric. We have that capacity for violence. But we're so prosperous nowadays that I think people don't want to screw it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost an underlying recognition that we have it so good despite what we profess. There's a lot of complaining going on despite how good we have it.
Correct.
But deep down, they've got to know that
you have this smile on your face.
Yeah, there's been so much progress. Otherwise, we'd see more conquering dictators and things like that.
It's interesting.
Well, the history of the world is conquering.
And I feel like I'm learning a lot about that. I've been to Catholic school my whole life since I was 4 years old. And so I still feel like just listening to the Bible in a year, like I'm learning stuff that I had not known or learned about. So I think that's even just history. It's very interesting.
I'm reading for the first time the rise and fall of the Third Reich. And I've always been fascinated by how the cult of personality still occurs today. So I'm reading about how Hitler, who was an artist who spent time in poverty in Vienna and struggled to feed himself. He was so broke, but he wouldn't get a regular job. He didn't have any friends because he had an off-putting personality. How did he ascend to the top of the ranks in Germany? Well, one, he was a good orator. But today, whether it's Barack Obama or Donald Trump, we see that today where people follow these great orators and would run through a wall literally for those guys or take a bullet or whatever. That's always going to happen. You know, there were things that preceded the rise of Hitler, which were things like destitution and poverty and inflation. And when you get somebody who's a good speaker, there's nothing more powerful than the human voice to persuade you to do something.
Yeah. Interesting. And that kind of goes back to the podcast that you guys had, the last one, talking about Eckhart Tolle. And about the ego. And so I was listening to him on the way here, and he was saying that about the ego and about like Hitler. And so that was like his ego. And so he gets all this power, and then his ego just feeds itself, and it just kind of turns into this disastrous mess. And so how different that is than your presence and your internal. So y'all had kind of talked about that on your last podcast.
You see a microcosm of that during COVID, where people want to tell others what to do. They thrive on that power.
Yes.
It's what Hitler did on a small scale. Like, he wants to have people subordinate themselves to him and pledge allegiance to him. And somebody who's walking around the grocery store just MFing somebody for not wearing a mask is seeking that power over them. They want to feel superior to them. It's disgusting. But it'll always be with us. It's human nature. I don't know if you listened to this episode. I think it was called Emotional Intelligence with Kisha. And she's
on yours?
A licensed and marital therapist.
I'm writing this down. Okay. I didn't hear this episode yet. Yeah, it would be like a family therapist. Yeah.
Yeah. Wait, I'm trying to remember what she said. Shit, I don't remember.
Human nature.
I don't know. This happens from time to time. That's why we have editors.
You're going
to
crop this out.
This happened when I was giving the talk to you guys, the three things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you were like, you forgot the third thing.
And write in your journal. I can't believe that I forgot three things. They say it's easier to remember things in threes. And I had recited that 100 times. I don't know what happened.
Oh, can you tell them the tip about how you remember people's names? Did you tell them?
The one as it pertains to you or the one that pertains to most people? Well, there are certain things that aid memory. Emotion is one of them, but location is really important. It's why you can remember something that you heard on a podcast. Like, you can remember exactly where you were.
Yes.
Well, when you place things in certain places in a house, for example, it helps you to retain them or have a memory of them. So what you want to do is create something about them that helps you remember them. So when somebody says in the first place, that is derived from this memory palace sort of tactic for learning, which is placement. So in the first place, and then it'll help you remember.
I was not aware of that. Okay.
You asked me how I remember names. Okay, so one, you just want to non-obviously repeat their name. So if Melanie introduces herself, find a way to repeat their name back to them.
But that's not what you did for me.
No. Well, with you, you have eyebrows that go straight up, kind of like mine. And
now they're going to think I'm crazy.
So I told you that they make an M, and so I would remember Melanie real easily. So if you can find something about their physical nature that helps you to remember their name, like maybe they wear glasses and their name is Gabriel, you know, whatever it is, something to aid your memory, or put them in a location. So if their name is Sunny, put them at the beach, and you know, things like that.
No, that's great, because I don't remember who said this, but like the sweetest sound
in the English language.
Yeah.
It was in How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. So the sweetest sound in the English language is somebody's name, at least to them.
Right.
So if you meet them again and you remember their name, that will leave a serious impression. And right. So one of the things that I used to do is in my journal, since I was going to be writing in it anyway, I would write down people's names and underline it. That way it would stand out in my journal. And it happened so many times where people are like, how do you remember my name?
Yeah.
But I would think, well, I wrote it down when I met you, so it's kind of hard not to remember it.
Right.
But that leaves an impression.
Today at Starbucks, on the way there, the lady was like, how do you spell your name? Like, because Melanie's not like necessarily the easiest name to spell, but she asked me, how do I spell it correctly? So I ordered a coffee, and then I had gone back to get like a water or something, and she said it right. And then she, hey, Melanie. And like, she remembered. And I was like, oh my goodness. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I didn't even ask you your name. And so I asked her name. And then by the end of it, we're like, great friend. See you later. Next time I come here, you know. So it just kind of has that effect on you if people remember your name. It makes a difference.
I think of it too, like we were talking about in interviews, how you want to be confident, but you also don't want to be arrogant.
Right.
So you have to balance that,
right.
the two.
Definitely.
It's kind of the same thing with remembering somebody's name. Like, you don't want to overuse their name in
Correct.
Conversation because that
yes.
can be a turnoff.
Yes.
I mean, it makes it obvious what you're doing. That's like the guy that grabs your elbow when he's shaking your hand.
Oh, I hate that.
Like, yeah,
more than anything.
Don't overdo it.
No, yeah.
So do you encounter people on a college campus who lack intellectual curiosity?
I don't think so. I think people, like you just Googled, are usually pretty curious. What I do think that there is a lack of is more courage to seek it. So I think people are always or tend to retreat back to what they've known. And it's almost like they don't want to put themselves out there to learn more because they're just so in their patterns or in their habits. Does that make sense?
Do you think that stems from people being coddled when they're young? Parents not wanting them to face failure and therefore they don't build courage?
Maybe so. Because one of the outcomes in my dissertation is mm-hmm. social courage. So I'm also interested in that too.
Love it. So let's talk about social courage.
Let's talk about it.
I was someone who had trouble walking up to people and introducing myself. Do you have a tip for how I could?
Yes.
Let me hear it.
Okay. So I don't know if you've ever heard of Amy Cuddy. Have you heard
yeah.
of her? Okay. Have you watched her TED Talk?
I think I have.
Where
yeah.
she stands like Superwoman. And anyway, so
I
tell my students, you don't necessarily have to stand like Superwoman whenever you meet somebody, but you need to make yourself stand up straight because then that can actually change like your thoughts. So whenever usually, and she says this in that talk where she says, usually whenever we go into an interview, we sit like hunched down and we look at our phones, right? And we cross our legs and we make ourselves small. A lot of females do this a lot more than men. I feel like men are a little bit more, they'll take up more space. But for the most part, you're looking at your phone, you're looking down, and that kind of brings this energy into you. And what you need to do instead is be sitting up straight, prep, like psyching yourself up. So like your wife, whenever I walked in, she was like, are you nervous? I was like, not really. But I remember I used to be terrified. Like, I was offered the job at Nichols to go teach. One of my former professors, he was like, I think you'd be great at this. I already had a job. I was working for my dad. I was his HR manager. And I said, absolutely not. That sounds terrifying. Like, I'm not. And he was like, just come interview. Just come. I prepped for this interview for days. I sweated. Like, I couldn't sleep. They call me, I go, I interview. By the time I'm done with it, I'm covered in sweat, like covered in sweat. I was so nervous. And they offered me the job and I turned it down. I was like, nope, this isn't for me. One of my favorite professors, and I work with him today, his name's Dr. Luke Cashin. He called me and he was like, you need to do this. You would be great at this. Your heart is here. And I was like, you're right. I would absolutely regret it for the rest of my life if I did not take this jump. And you asked me, like, my parents are both entrepreneurs, right? And so I think that kind of gave me, like, I talked to them about it and they were like, you need to do this. If this is in your heart, this is what you need to do. But I don't know if everybody has that support. And so I think that it's important to have that. So anyway, so I turned it down. Now I'm not afraid. Like, I'm just like, I've done it so many times mm-hmm. that I'm like, it's kind of routine to me.
Yeah, force yourself to do it. Yes. I remember taking my nephew. It was a water park when he was 11. Mm-hmm. And we went all the way to the top. He walked all the way down without me knowing because I went on the slide first.
Yeah.
And I had a talk with him when we got down there about courage.
Uh-huh. That's the feeling that people get before they get up to do a presentation in my class, before they do the mock interview. But get it out now.
Yeah.
Practice now. Get that courage up now. Then they're more prepared. They're ready. They're gonna attack it. It's all mental.
Yeah.
It's so mental.
I told him that you're gonna encounter things mm-hmm. that you fear the rest of your life. You want to start now overcoming those fears.
Mm-hmm.
It all gets easier once you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Force yourself to do it. Close your eyes if you have to. I bungee jumped at 35 years old. I never thought I would do that. I wouldn't do it again now that I have a kid.
I was about to ask.
The support thing is huge. You don't know what other kids experience, what their experience has been at home. Like, I remember the first time anybody ever told me they were proud of me. I was 18 years old. And it was like being told, I love you by this
yes.
guy you're obsessed with through 2 years, and he's never told you. I was just like, it was just this overwhelming feeling of, not only is he proud of me, but he's pulling for me. He wants me to
yes.
succeed in life.
Yes.
And so I'm going to think about that every day.
Yeah.
I want to impress him.
Right.
So that's why mentors are so important, and having people that you respect and admire, that you can look up to, that you want to impress. Those people you don't want to let down. Those
right.
people are so important.
Right.
And I'm sure you are that for a lot of people right now.
Well, thank you. That's why I'm teaching. I've always, and literally when I was 3 or 4 years old, my mom's like, she's going to be a teacher. Like, I wanted to always, that's what I've always wanted to be. But whenever I got to college, I was trying to determine my major, and my mom's like, okay, I know you want to be a teacher, but you can't because you're not going to be able to support yourself. That's what mm-hmm. she said, because she's a teacher. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so she convinced me to go through business, HR, and thank goodness I did, because it worked out, and now I'm a teacher.
And I know you don't do it for the money. You told me.
Absolutely
how much
not.
You make.
Yes, I took a huge pay cut to go back to Nichols to be an instructor. But now they just offered me an assistant professor position. I start in August. So I'm moving up. I'm excited because I am finishing up my PhD. So it's called ABD, All But Dissertation. And so I'm super excited that they, you know, fought for me to stay on and get me that role.
So that's not the role that you're taking after your schooling is done?
So that is it. Yes.
Oh, okay.
So they're giving it to me in August.
And your salary is doubling, correct?
Almost.
Wow. If I gave you a number of $65,000 and said, is your salary over or under that right now, what would you say?
Right.
As a
just
professor.
At Nichols. So, you know, I work at
I know you have another job, yes.
Okay. All right. Under.
Yeah. That's amazing. How many classes?
3. I will be I'm teaching 4 right now, but I will be teaching 3.
Why do you put so much on your plate?
So, I like to help people, and I like learning. I like working in HR because then I get to bring that practical knowledge to my students. So it's not like I'm just like, oh, here's what the book says. It's like, this is what we're doing.
That's awesome. The most helpful class I had in college was with a guy named Dr. Chris Cox. I don't think he's there anymore. Was he there?
But he was marketing, right?
And he had us do a mock sales call. He recorded it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've told this story before, I think on the Josh Lusky pod, when Josh Lusky was a guest on the podcast. But the only thing he gave me bad marks for was the rapport building aspect of it.
Okay.
And I hated that because I don't even like play fighting. Like, don't throw a slow fist in the air at my face. I do not like that. We're going to end up actually fighting. So when you go into somebody's office and you say, oh, that's a picture of your kids, and I see he plays baseball, do you coach him? I don't like that. It's fake. I don't want to be fake ever.
Mm-hmm.
I just want the real deal. So mm-hmm. the fact that he gave me bad marks, and he's not going to listen to this. He's an awkward bastard sometimes. So for him to give me bad marks for building rapport, I couldn't believe it.
You felt real bad.
Yeah, I'll remember it the rest of my life.
Obviously.
But Dr. Cox, that was so helpful. So one of the things your mom said in the Netiquette video was that in the corporate world, you want to address females with MS period.
Yes.
And then their name. I had never heard that before.
Really?
I wonder if that's Louisiana specific because...
No, I think it's more formal.
You call your friend's moms Miss, right?
Yes.
You always have.
Yes.
Where I come from, we call each other's friends' parents by their first name.
What?
Yeah.
Where you come from?
It's a jungle in the Amazon. Houston. It's like
I'm just
that
kidding.
In Houston.
I'm just
yeah,
really?
I always thought it was weird too.
I feel like that's...
I was in ninth grade and my best friend's dad was Bruce.
I mean, mate, Bruce.
Yeah.
Straight up.
It felt Bruce. Disrespectful.
I feel like that. Yeah.
It felt disrespectful.
But I mean, maybe it is this other thing.
It's
but,
a culture, yeah.
She was meaning like, don't call them, like, don't title MRS if they're married or MISS. The most formal or the most appropriate is MS. Period. Like, Miss whatever. Like, even if you know that they're married.
Why is it that parents who have success in business often want their kids to be doctors or lawyers or academics?
My parents didn't push me for that at all. Like, at all. It's all internally driven for me.
You hear it a lot in minority communities, like Asians who own a nail salon or... Arabs who own a dry cleaning business and they do really well and they end up building a bunch of them, and because they're diligent savers they build all kinds of crazy wealth, which means they can send their kids to any school
right.
that they want, but it's like they never encourage them to go into business, and that always surprises me. I guess doctor, engineer, lawyer is more prestigious. That's the only thing I can gather.
Maybe. Or if they have, or if they feel like they've worked so hard, like maybe they don't want their kids to go through that path.
I don't know. I know you know doctors that work their tail off, huh?
That's true. Yeah. I'm not really sure. Yeah.
So you're researching entrepreneurial personality?
I did.
Okay. Tell me about that.
Okay. So my dissertation chair, he is Dr. Matt Howard. He is big on entrepreneurial personality, and so we did a meta-analysis. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah, it's an analysis of analyses.
Good job.
Wait, I want to back up. So
okay, back up.
If I impressed you with that, I'm going to really unimpress you with this.
What's this?
What is a dissertation?
Okay, so a dissertation is like your final research paper for a PhD program.
And does that take an entire semester?
Oh, it takes a year, at least. I started on mine last September, so I'm ahead of the game.
Like,
I'm ahead of the game.
Like, hey, I'm a quarter in. Does
yes.
this look good?
We talk about, yeah, there's chapters, and I send it to my chair. So, like, the first chapter is the introduction. You have to go through school, all of the PhD program, to understand how to set up a research paper. How do you build your conceptual model? What scales are you going to use? The scales have to be valid and reliable, right? Like, you can't just... say, oh, I think I'm going to ask them this question. No, the scales that you use have to be validated, reliable, and they teach you how to conduct research to where you're minimizing bias and error if you can. But the goal is to basically see, come up with a unique idea, research idea for your dissertation that can kind of launch you into future research that you can get published, right? But my research that I'm interested in is personality and how that kind of affects the workplace and outcomes at work. And so I want to kind of bridge the gap between academia and research, because I know it's getting better, but I feel like a lot of research hasn't been practical. It's more like research just for the sake of researching, but I want to bring it to the workplace. And so it's kind of cool that I'm in both worlds. You know, right now I'm an HR director and I absolutely love it. I love the people there, but I get to kind of apply and see what I'm learning right in my research in the workplace.
That is cool. Did you hear about the research that James Lindsay and Peter Boghossian did?
No.
They did a paper on, and it was published, on the promiscuity of dogs at dog parks.
No.
And like rape in doggy culture.
What?
And things like that. It was all a BS study, but they were proving the ideological bias of academia. So they used verbiage from Mein Kampf, which is Adolf Hitler's manifesto. They produced this study that didn't mean anything, and just to see if they could get it through.
Get it published.
And they did, yeah.
Huh.
So you sent me, I imagine you do some things with the Big Five?
Yes. So, okay, the big five. Uh-huh. Openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism. The two that I'm specifically looking at for my dissertation are extroversion and neuroticism at work. So those that score higher on extroversion, I want to see how social media, because there's been, and I'm looking at effective events theory. So it's basically like how people are affected by certain things and how that, you know, based on your personality, I feel like I'm proposing that some are more affected than others. So I'm proposing that extroverted people will see this stuff on Facebook and they're more extroverted. And so maybe that will affect them differently in the workplace than somebody who is more neurotic and what they see on Facebook. You know, and how does that affect them in the workplace? And so I'm
totally gonna, makes sense.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see my results. I haven't gotten that far yet. Like, I've collected my data, but I'm still working on analyzing.
So you're high in extroversion, I imagine.
Yes.
High in openness.
Yes.
Lower in neuroticism.
I hope so.
Conscientiousness.
I'm super high in conscientiousness. Yes, that's probably one. Extroversion and conscientiousness.
I'm interested. Where do you fall there?
Pretty agreeable. I'm trying not to be as agreeable.
I think you have to be less agreeable if you're going to succeed in the corporate world, right?
Yeah. So I struggle with that because I feel like I'm a recovering people pleaser. it's gotten me this far, mm-hmm. but I need to kind of. My friend said I collect, one of my best friends, she said I collect people. She said I always want to help everybody. And she's like, we need to stop. Like, you need to stand up. You know, like, I need to, like, self-preserve. Yeah, there we go.
People, I say this a lot, but people will value their own time about 1,000x to what they value yours.
Yeah.
Usually it's 1,000x to zero. So if you're too agreeable, people will take advantage of your time.
Yes.
Your time means almost nothing to them.
Yes.
They will exploit you and use you and spit you back out and not even give you a thank you. I would be, let's see.
Can I guess?
Yeah.
I think you're extroverted to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
Very open. Super, let's see. I think you would be a little bit lower on agreeableness because I feel like you would stand up for yourself and value your time. I don't know. Am I right? Am I good? What do you think?
I think that I'm about 70-30 if I could apply a percentage to extroversion because mm-hmm. I enjoy solitude a lot. I can just spend time in my head and really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Just coming up with stuff to ponder and think about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to be the life of the party, but oddly enough, I was telling my brother a story the other day, and I said, I used to tell this story at parties, and he said, I remember. And it's almost weird to me, like I forgot that when mm-hmm. I was in college, I would come up with a story. Well, I'll give you an example. I was following an ambulance on I-10 in Houston, and one of the back doors, you know, there's two back doors on an ambulance. One of them flew open, and this box comes tumbling out and hit the front of my car. So I stopped, I pulled over, and I had to wait for traffic to subside a little bit before I ran out in the middle of the interstate to get this box. Well, when I opened it, there was a human toe in there.
Stop.
So I called a tow truck. That's the kind of story I would tell. And I forgot that I used to do that. And so it's no surprise now, reflecting back.
You had me all sucked in, and then I'm like.
Well, that's what I would do. But that's why I became a sales guy, because I really enjoyed
telling a story.
Room on edge with a story. Yeah,
you have me on edge.
That's what you do in sales. You tell stories. And
yeah. And so I can see that.
Openness. So openness to experience, yes.
I think yes.
What's the other?
Conscientiousness.
Definitely.
Agreeableness.
Agreeable, very low. I am not agreeable.
Yes.
I am not. Yeah, to a fault.
That's okay. It's okay.
I will argue with my mom or anybody.
Because you're a lion.
I'm what?
A lion.
A lion, yeah. So this test that you sent me, did we do all of them?
Neuroticism.
Oh, low.
Low.
Extremely low, yeah. Okay, you sent me a test. And the results came back that I'm an independent thinker, work is play, enjoy challenges, find new ways to do routine. Yes, definitely independent thinker. Work was play to me. Like on Sunday, I never dreaded going to work. It was just another day of the week for me. I never felt stressed out despite having quotas and pressure and all that. I just did the best I could and let the chips fall where they may. Do I enjoy challenges? Yeah, of course. Find new ways to do routine. Yes, I do mix up my routine and my workouts. In love, prefer to think than let your heart dictate love. Yes.
Okay. So if I come in here and I affirm your wisdom and your thoughts and your brain, does that excite? Like, that's no. What?
I would be like, yeah, I knew that already.
You're like,
yeah.
I'm aware.
Yeah. Okay. Which is one of the differences between men and women. True. Women, when they say something like that, and a woman's like, oh my God, me too. And then you get these feelings in your chest and you bond that way. A woman can be let down if she says the same thing to a man and he's like, well, yeah, of course I'm right. I knew that. Yeah. And so there's none of that feeling explosion between them. And she gets frustrated sometimes. Okay, what about you on that one?
Okay, so I am, they call it blue. So you're green, right?
Yeah, sorry, I should add, it says as a kid you felt older than your years. Very much so. Like to focus on things that were mentally stimulating, yes. Impatient with drills and questioned authority. What does that mean, impatient with drills?
Like you grow impatient. You want to basically get things done pretty quickly.
I don't know.
Go-getter, kind of.
So I think what my initial thought was is that repetition is the mother of skill, the mother of learning. And so if it's a repetitive sort of task, like a drill to where I know it's going to make me better, like learning a new language or something, I'm happy to do it.
Okay.
But I need to know the point, which is you've got to tell me why.
Why?
Which is interesting because the next part of this says need to respect teachers before you can learn from them. And I'll respect a teacher if they tell me why. If you just tell me, do it because I said so, that is
you're out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I am, they call it blue on here. And this is just a little quick personality thing that I give my students. And it kind of helps me gauge where they're at. It actually gets them thinking about themselves and their strengths, their weaknesses. What do they like? What do they not like? This helps with me helping them find a major that fits them, a job that fits. Because if you keep going, it says careers at the back. But I'm blue. Enthusiastic. Sympathetic. Which obviously you would want for HR, right? You would want somebody that cares about people. Warm, communicative, compassionate, idealistic, spiritual, sincere, peaceful, flexible, imaginative. In work, I like to influence others to help their lives. Like, that's my whole drive, right? That's why I teach. It's when I get those stories back and those thank yous, and that is just like, you've changed my life, and that's my drive. That's my reward.
Yeah, if you could find that, and it also pays well.
Yeah, right? I like to work in the arts. Yes.
Yes. You gave my wife and I a beautiful picture of a pelican or a painting. A painting of a pelican. And it'll show up in the picture that my wife took of us. Check it out. It's awesome.
Education or helping professions. So, yes. In love, seek balanced relationships. Believe in a true romantic, perfect love that will last forever. I definitely do have that fairy tale. Like, I always am a hopeless romantic. To a flaw, almost.
I was concerned that this was going to be like a horoscope where
no
the answers apply to everybody, but everything you've told me is not me. But
yeah,
what
it's
you
me.
Gave
no, it's me.
Me.
Yeah. No, it's me.
Yeah, so that's good. It's confirming.
As a kid, active imagination, difficult to fit into school life. More like I was super into learning and being more socially, like I had more issues now, not so much. But when I was growing up, I was like more into just learning and studying, and I kind of consumed myself. And I think a lot of that had to do with my age because I was like the youngest one in my class. And so, like, I think I started at Nichols when I was 17 and I graduated at 20. So I couldn't even like legally drink in college.
When's your birthday?
August 24th.
I'm June, so
I was the youngest.
College at 17, too.
Yes. Some people
finished
call me
23, I think.
Really?
At 22.
I'm still in school. Look, it doesn't count.
Yeah. Do you think people are much more likely to pursue advanced degrees when they do well in school. Like, sometimes I'm concerned that people stay in school because they're good at it. And why would you go to the real world when you could spend another 6 years at this thing you excel at? And it, of course, is going to benefit you. But I hate it when I see people go into all kinds of debt in order to do it.
Yeah. That's why I'm working two jobs right now. If you, because you had said, why do you do with your time? He is a VP of an aerospace, like, so he's the VP of aerospace for a company in Houma.
Engineer or sales?
He's engineering mindset. He doesn't have a degree. He's been working there since he was 17 years old. He's one of the most, he's one of the smartest people I know. Very engineering mindset, but doesn't have a degree.
Hmm. It's rare to hear a wife call their husband smart.
He's more intelligent than me. Wow. Hands down.
That's a power couple then, huh?
Hope
good
so.
For y'all.
He's very, we think very differently, but he's very, very intelligent.
My wife and I once did a substance, and
where is this going?
She opened up to me in a way that she had never before, and I did the same. It was reciprocal. One of the things I asked her as we were in this other dimension, I said, what would it be like if you were smarter than me? And she thought about it for like 10 seconds and she goes, wait, if I
she's like,
was
I am
smarter than you. It reminds me of the question that I asked her in Fun Questions, which is not wanting something just as good as having it. The same way that people repeat that question to themselves, mm-hmm. she repeated it to,
she's like,
to herself.
Yeah.
What preceded this question was we were talking about the age difference of mm-hmm. us and mm-hmm. how men and women seek different things. And so would she even be attracted to me if she were smarter than me? And the answer has got to be no.
No.
What girl would go for a guy that's, let's say, more than 10 years older, who's that's, not smarter, also
oh,
smarter
I see.
Than her?
Okay. Okay.
Because it's almost
I see
like,
what you're saying.
Why go for a guy who's 10 years older if they're not, if they don't have more wisdom and experience?
That makes sense. He's definitely smarter than me, in my opinion. He thinks very differently than me.
Yeah, and I know it's not PC to say, but if I'm 35 and start dating a 22-year-old, if she's smarter than me, I got a real problem.
Yeah. Like, what's she doing?
She's just entering the real world, mm-hmm. right? So, yeah, it's not politically correct to say.
But they can have different smarts.
Of course.
So it could be complimentary.
Of course, yeah. And we
so
are
so that could be us too, yeah.
Yeah, intelligence is a weird thing. I mean, I was telling her that there was this talented and gifted program in between 7th and 8th grade that I wasn't accepted to. But Louisiana being the way that it is, my mom talked to some people and
you got
me
in
this program.
How'd that go?
Well, it was sad. I was thinking, I didn't do well on this test to pass to get in here, but I'm just as smart as these people, if not smarter than them. And one of the three classes that I took was athletics. We played like pickleball, and of course I was a good athlete, so I dominated. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, if I'm an A plus in this class, that would average out my other two classes. One of them was biology. But it got me thinking, like, was college that way? Like, what if you got into Stanford or Harvard? Would you get there and realize, wait a minute, I just didn't do well on the test,
right.
but I'm
right.
just as smart as these people.
Yeah, so like my GMAT score is not very high, but I will outwork anybody there. And so my GPA is 4.0, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I'm not a very good standardized test taker, but I'll outwork anybody. And that's what I told my current boss. And he was asking me when we were kind of going through like, you know, what do you want to work here? What would it take for you to come work here? That kind of stuff. And I'm like, I'm telling you, I'm going to, like, so I've gotten to the point where I'm like, I'm not trying to be cocky. I'm not at all, but I'm going to outwork. Like, I'm a hard worker.
Yeah. That's good.
Like, know what you have.
When I was young, I was a really good poker player, like, before it became mainstream. And one of my approaches, my main approach, was usually slow playing. And what I relate that to about my personality is being understated, which is something I've been told before. It's kind of like with the podcast, I had a guest tell me, I didn't have any idea that you had this intellectualism about you. And it's because I don't talk a lot. I prefer to listen. Whatever intellectualism I have, it's probably stems from all the listening that I've done, and I like to read, and that's...
Which is a skill that not a lot of people have, is listening.
Oh, I know. It's getting worse.
Yes. So that's like, we have these classes on talking and speaking, but active listening is a skill that, I mean, I still work on it, but it's like people are constantly thinking of what they're going to say next while you're talking, you know? So it's hard to actively listen.
You know what I think part of the problem is? I've tweeted about Jimmy Fallon recently. I said, if Jimmy Fallon was a faster thinker, he wouldn't have to laugh so much. So what he does
is he laughs.
Interviewing somebody, he'll laugh for 10 seconds.
And thinks about what he wants to say.
Yeah.
So that means he's actively listening when they're talking?
Perhaps. But if he thought faster, he wouldn't have to go on and on with this fake laugh.
Mm-hmm.
You know it's inauthentic, this laugh. So what I'm getting at is if you could work to think faster, then you could be a better listener.
Yes.
Because it enables you more time to focus on the person speaking. And then
you can respond quickly.
But people aren't thinking fast enough, therefore have to use the time that they should be listening to think of what
that
it
makes
is they're going to say.
That makes sense.
It's also a selfish thing. People who are more selfish are not going to be as good a listeners. Which reminds me, Jared Parfait was on and said that one of the things he raises his son to do is when somebody walks in the room, an adult especially, you need to stand up.
Yes.
I can remember going to visit someone, a buddy of mine, walking in. I had driven 6 hours, and he laid on the couch and didn't get up. And I must have been 24. I said, stand the fuck up. What is wrong with you? And I don't know where that came from. Like, why? Where did I learn that from? Some things are just so obvious, and listening to me is one of those things.
Everybody has that.
I met a guy for coffee yesterday, and we had been sitting there right at about an hour. He had looked at his phone 4 times while we were talking. The first time he apologized, he forced the end, but he started to put his earphones in his ear and then looks at his phone and tells me that he's got a call with his lawyer.
No.
Which adds import to the call, right? It's his lawyer. Who knows if he really has a call with his lawyer, but I just thought, how does
that's
this guy
rude.
Not,
that's not
know
okay.
any better?
Right.
But we've come so far. We're so immersed in this technology. It's so embedded in our lives.
Well, like, also, too, it's like it's a computer, you know? So, like, you were Googling on your computer, but I don't have my computer out, so I'm Googling on my phone, you know? So it's like a part of you. And it's like you have to train people or train yourself and people to not look at it, to not get on Facebook, to not whatever. It's so distracting.
I think it's why self-awareness has become such
a hot
popular
topic.
Yes. Because people don't have it.
Yes.
If they had it, then they would become aware when they're checking email on their phone or checking text messages in the middle of a conversation. I like to tell people you date for friends the same way that you would date for romance. If I were on a date and a girl starts putting earphones in her ear and has to go because of a phone, I'm be like,
you're like, really?
I will never answer that guy's text again.
No. Yeah.
So how do those people build relationships? I guess, you know, we attract what we become. And so if I were somebody who was like that too, I'd probably...
I think that's probably the whole online gaming thing now too, is like another... we don't have PlayStation, whatever. But I think a lot of that too is they have the headphones in and they're talking to each other on there. And it's like communication on... So I think a lot of people are getting like their friend interaction also through that as well.
That's a great point. When you're living your life, your lived experience, which is a common phrase nowadays, it's so hard to imagine or know how other people are going about their daily lives. So I was at Best Buy one time, and I was talking to a guy who was almost my age, and I was looking for a headset, actually. And he pointed me to this headset and said, this is what gamers use. And he was assuming that I was
a gamer. That you were a gamer.
Mm-hmm. And so I started to ask him about his gaming activity. And he said, oh, yeah, dude, I was up till 6 a.m.
Yes.
Playing whatever. And I'm like,
all
whoa.
Night. Like, this is like a whole nother world.
Yes.
So to
I know nothing
there are
about
so
it.
So many people out there that are spending like 10 hours a day gaming.
Yeah.
And I get it because the games are so good. The technology is so advanced from when I was a kid. But for my purposes,
yeah, I had Mario Kart.
Tetris. That would keep me from playing because I know how addictive it could
be. Yeah, I don't even, because I agree. I would probably want to play often, you know, whatever. So I don't.
But
even
to me,
have
that's
it.
One of those obvious things too. Like, why would you want to play stupid games and win stupid prizes? Don't you contrast that with the real world? Don't you want to win in the real world? Because you don't get anything for winning there. And it's been proven too that most people get depressed.
Yes.
As a result of that sort of thing.
It's almost like a drug. Yeah. It's almost like another
like an escape.
Yeah.
Escapism.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask about the human resources case competition. What is a human resource competition?
Okay, so they didn't have it this past year with COVID, but I would bring 4 to 5 students, and they don't get any extra credit for this. This is just like they just volunteer. And we kind of go through a little bit of an interview process, depending on how many people want. Usually I bring one team, and we compete against other schools. And we get a business case. And so it's an HR problem. How would these students solve this HR problem based on what they've learned? And then they have to present the case to HR practitioners. And we competed against other schools. And Nichols has won every year. We beat LSU. We beat Southeastern. We've beat. So I've taken these students every year except for COVID.
Same students or a different group?
Different group. And they take what they've learned in the classroom and they apply it, and they present this case. They go through what's the problem, what are some different alternative solutions, what are we going to run with, what are our action strategies, and kind of go from there. How would we implement this in a company? You know, looking at the HR laws and all that. And they came up with like an action plan, and they knock it out in the park every time, and it's awesome
to
see.
Is it written, or do they?
It's a written case, but then they also do the presentation part too.
And there's a panel of 3 or 4
There's a panel of, I think, 4 to 5 HR professionals in the state of Louisiana.
How do they grade them?
So they have a rubric, and the rubric is just basically, you know, how are they solving the problem? Who's the, you know, most knowledgeable, I guess, about the problem? How are these people presenting the issue? Are they dressed professionally? And so they give us this feedback. It's awesome feedback. And so I give them copies of it. But they also go in, like, and nobody knows the school because it's different kids every year. And so it's not like you've seen the same ones, but like they can't say what school they're from. They can't dress in school colors. So
that's a big deal because you will really get screwed playing baseball and there's an umpire. You're playing against LSU.
Yeah. You can't wear school colors. So they wear black suits with white shirts, and they go, and they've knocked it out the park every single time. And so
and you're
it's,
the coach?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So,
what does that prep look like?
So I am not allowed to help them solve the case. I'm allowed to help them practice and get like prepared and make sure that they kind of are ready to go. And so we talk a lot before they even get the case. I don't get to see it. They even, like, we talk about the best way to give a presentation. We do practice presentations. How do you dress? What are some tips, you know, for solving this, you know, solving any case? How would you structure this? And then they run with it based on what they've learned and the research that they do as well. With, like, so I give them the resources to go on the Society of Human Resource .org, you know, they get to go on the Department of Labor's website. Like I give them those links to where this is me as an HR person. This is where I would go. Have fun. And they knock it out the park. It's awesome. So fun. So fun.
So were most of these kids going into HR?
Yes, almost all of them. And a lot of them have gotten jobs from just doing this and networking with people.
Awesome. Yeah. What percentage are female? Roughly
75.
A lot of people in the corporate world get disgruntled because they feel like HR has too much power.
Yes.
And they don't believe it's right that
yes,
someone who may be inferior makes a decision on their livelihood.
Yes.
How do you feel about that?
I agree. I tell my students, you are there to help these people and you are there to protect the company. But you are not the police. You have to enforce policy. I get that. But don't let the power go to your head, because too many people do. And that's why people don't like HR. And you want to be the person that people come to when there's an issue. You want to be the person that you can listen to people. If you don't like people, you should not be in HR. But you need to be humble and stay humble, because if not, nobody's going to come to you.
Has your company changed their diversity hiring in recent years?
So they're pretty diverse. Like, we have not had like an affirmative action plan. That's usually governed if you're like a federal contractor, but we're not. But they usually pretty much hire a lot of diverse people. It's more, can you do the job? This is the hard work that our guys go in these tanks and they clean and they work long hours. And there's a lot of diversity. And I think it's been that way for a long time.
You remember the book Freakonomics?
No.
Stephen Dubner. There was a chapter dedicated to those who had African names submitting their resume.
Okay.
And not getting interviews because they had a hard to pronounce name.
Okay.
Have you ever encountered anything like that with students?
I do have one student, and she says, call me Zid, because her name is hard to pronounce.
So her name on her resume would be Zid?
No, Sid.
Sid. Sorry.
I tell her to put it in parentheses because it's hard for me to pronounce it. And she, like, it's not that I don't try. So I would recommend that you put something that people call you or that you want people to call you in parentheses. So, like, I put, sometimes I'll even, like I told the lady at Starbucks, call me Mel. Like, if you can't spell Melanie, call me Mel. Whatever you're comfortable with. But I think you need to be true to yourself, too.
I think some listeners outside of the southeastern United States will find it funny that you are a Boudreaux who lives in Thibodeau.
Yes. Very. Very ironic, right? My maiden name was Morgan. That was a lot easier to pronounce. Benny should have just taken my last name.
What's your lineage?
My dad is from Houma. His family, his dad is from Pecan Island, out by, you know where that is? It's out by Lafayette area. My mom and her family, my mom's dad is from, so they're Bergs, and they're from Lockport, Louisiana. You know where that is? Yeah. So yeah, kind of all from South Louisiana area.
Do you feel pretentious when you refer to your undergrad?
No.
These people with regular degrees like myself, we never use that term.
They don't say undergrad, really? I guess
why
I'm just
would I?
Yeah. No, I never really thought about that. I enjoyed the heck out of Nichols. If Nichols offered a PhD program, I'd be there. I think I would.
But instead, you attend South Alabama?
Yes.
University of?
Yes.
How do you feel about the rise in tuition costs that Americans are experiencing?
I'm dealing with that right now. With my PhD program, it's super expensive. But it'll pay off for me because I plan on staying and working at Nichols and my retirement will be there. Like everything else, costs are rising and things are going up. But it's expensive. It's a burden. And so that's why I'm working two jobs. But also, I think that the education is worth it for sure. In my case,
you see it as an investment
for sure.
Is that something you talk to students about the
yes.
fact that the outlay of cash for this Nichols State experience is going to have a return of some sort of X amount of dollars when they get out?
Yes,
that was never explained to me. That's something I had to
and
learn
I show
on my own.
Them like statistics that show like. Yeah, you might start out making this much right now, but you have more of a potential to grow and make more money if you have this degree. But we also talk about just the resources that our students have through going through this, learning how to research, learning how to look things up and where to go and who to contact and connect with and the connections that they make at Nichols. And truly, we're one of the cheaper schools in the state of Louisiana. I mean, our College of Business program is top notch. We have the highest accreditation that a College of Business can have. And I think only the top 10% of business schools have that. We do a lot with not a ton of funding. And so I think that they're getting a quality program when they come through us.
And it's something like $4,400 a semester. Does that sound right?
About, yeah.
What class is it that you teach where kids are getting all this prep for the real world?
Human resource management. So
see, I wouldn't even think to take that class, but I would want this experience.
300 level. Come on. This is a 300 level. I usually teach sophomores, juniors and seniors. They have to have 54 hours before they take this class. I touch on it a little bit in my Management 301 class, which is, but I teach that one online. So that's kind of hard for me to do. I do show them the netiquette video. Like I give them the link. I do give them resources, but I feel like it's not the same as the face-to-face class, which I'm so excited that we'll be almost fully back face-to-face in the fall, because that's where I just love. It's much more difficult to reach people through a computer, you know, and they're looking at things at different times, and it's just not asynchronous for that class.
Do you want to do fun questions?
Sure.
Social media, net negative or net positive for society?
Oh, net negative.
Why?
Because, and that's what my dissertation that I'm looking at is on, I feel like people are so caught up in, I feel like even me, like even everybody, your image that you put out there on social media, is that really who you are?
Do you have any suggestions for how to make it authentically you?
Minimize it as much as possible, and then...
But wouldn't that just portray highlights?
Yeah.
If you minimized it too much?
Yeah. Or not have it at all. I know a lot of people don't have it at all. Some people. I don't know.
Who's on their phone more, you or your husband?
Both. Just because our works are so busy, but we try to consciously say, like, when we get home, okay, let's pick up our phone. I'm trying. We're trying. We're having to make, like, a conscious effort to pick up our phones. Just because we both have such demanding jobs.
At what age will you allow your kids to have a phone?
Okay, so they have the little iPod right now where they can, like, play certain games. But I very greatly restrict the time that they can be on it. I don't let them go to bed with, like, they can't bring it in their rooms and go to bed. They can, you know, just every now and then, whenever I really need to get something done, I let them watch, you know, I'd rather them, like, a lot of my kids are always almost outside. Unless it's raining, you know, then we're trying to do something inside. But my kids like to be outside, chase lizards, kill lizards, poor things. Like, I'm like, stop touching the lizards.
Your daughter comes to you when she's 10 and says, Mom, my friends have an Instagram.
That has already happened. Not Instagram, but my daughter, like, some of her friends, they had, like, this little texting app. I'm like, no. They barely know how to, like, I mean, she's writing, but, like, I'm like, no.
George Clooney or Brad Pitt?
Brad Pitt.
Who's funnier, Trevor Noah or getting a paper cut?
Oh my gosh. I got a paper cut yesterday.
So, Trevor.
Sure.
Well, you laughed.
Sure.
Is the paper
yes.
cut funnier than Trevor Noah?
Maybe.
Which is funnier, former SNL cast member Leslie Jones or stubbing your toe in the dark of night?
Oh my goodness. I feel like these questions are set up for me. Are these trick questions?
Mm-mm.
No.
If you could go anywhere in the world for a week, where would you go?
This is a great question.
My last two were
Key West.
Bad. Whoa, that's what Coach G Cassard.
Really?
Yes.
Key West is one of my absolute favorite places.
So you'd go back to somewhere you've already been?
I would go there every year. I could retire there.
What's so great about it?
It is so relaxing. It is like this kind of, his patio is amazing, but it's just so tropical. The plants, it's just, it's also marina life. I love the water. I used to swim in high school, coach a swim team. We have a pool, and I'm just water I love to fish. I like to be outside. And so that's just kind of one of my favorite places. My heart was just like happy there. You know, you go somewhere and you're just like, I'm here, you know, like, so I feel like that's where I've been that I did not want to leave.
If you were stuck in Key West by yourself and could only bring one band's album, what
you know
are you taking?
Matchbox 20.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
3 a.m.
You met Rob Thomas.
I did for my 30th birthday.
And what'd you think?
He's amazing. Me and some of my friends, we went to his concert for my 30th birthday. And we stayed at the hotel right by the wharf. And he was there, him and his band. And we were literally the only ones in the restaurant with him and his band. And they were super nice. His son was there. He told me happy birthday, took pictures. It was just like surreal to me. I was like, you were my ringtone. Back when ringtones were a thing. Yeah. 3 a.m. was my ringtone. And whenever he played Bright Lights, which is like one of my favorite songs, it was so cool and surreal because I had just met him the night before. And it was just, they were just awesome, truly awesome people.
Whenever I hear the words Matchbox 20, I think, sitting by the overcoat, second shelf, the note she wrote.
I can't sing. Please edit that out.
If someone were to give you $100,000 worth of stock in one of these three companies, which would you take?
Okay.
Spotify, Airbnb, or Pinterest?
Oh, Spotify.
Do you use Spotify?
Yes, sometimes.
The free version or the paid
version? Free.
It's tough now that Spotify has a lot of podcasts.
That's why I'm thinking about it, because I think that's going to grow.
I think so, too.
I use Pinterest. My husband has a Pinterest. He uses Pinterest for his woodworking stuff all the time. You need to come see all of our outdoor patio furniture, our furniture in our house. His dad taught him how to do all of that. And so he sells it.
That is impressive.
Yeah. He has a Pinterest. But I think that Spotify would be probably the one that's going to grow the most, just because I think more people are going to get into podcasts. And I think that's going to be more of a thing.
Yeah. I liked that I had to go to Apple Podcasts. I didn't have to, but I used to go to Apple Podcasts to listen to podcasts. And then when I wanted to listen to music, I would go to Spotify. Well, now that I listen to more podcasts on Spotify, I don't like getting those in the same place.
Okay.
I don't know. It's you like having an ice cream shop at the gym. You know, I don't want that. I want to get
counterintuitive.
Yeah. Okay. You're hosting a dinner party at your house and cost is not an issue.
Okay.
Are you having 4 guests, 6 guests, or 12 guests?
I'm going to have as many as I can, 12.
12. How long is too long to stay?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, that would be my pet peeve. that I like to go to bed early. Mm-mm. And so I have some friends and, like, I love them. But they know. I will just straight up, I love y'all, but I'm going to bed because it's, like, 10 or 11. And I usually go to bed really early.
It's a weird dynamic, right? I had a buddy over here 2 nights ago for the concert. And I told him that I was going to a baseball game that started at 6:45. And I said, I'm comfortable missing the first half, but I want to be there for the latter half. And so he had showed up at our house maybe 2.5 hours prior. And I said, well, do you want to come with me?
Right.
But if you do, you'd probably want to drive because it's close to Metairie and he lives right over there. And it reminded me of being a kid, like when you're over at a friend's house and then they have an errand to run and they say, well, you can come with me. And then you're like, well, does he really want me to come with him? And mm-hmm. Do I really want to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm kind of captive. I can't just leave when I want. We're riding in his car. And it was interesting because I hadn't been in that dynamic since I was a kid. I take my car everywhere.
I don't. Yeah. I drive because if I'm ready to like go to sleep.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, bye. Yeah. But y'all could stay and have a party at my house, but I'm going to go to sleep.
Yeah.
You don't have to leave, but I'm going to go to bed.
Yeah, it's just interesting dynamics. And most of that stuff happens when you're a kid, right? When you have sleepovers and all that.
Yes.
We stayed at Matt Ory's camp with he and his now wife. And I remember they went to bed real early. And Miriam and I just decided, well, we'll just go to bed too. Because we felt weird, like staying up and watching their TV.
Yeah.
It was our first night we had ever spent at the camp.
Yeah.
And they probably said, make yourself at home. But
yeah.
Is there anything cooler than having a sleepover with friends? I love that. There are houses around the world, like on Airbnb, that are 6-bedroom mansions that rent for like $2,000 a night. Mm-hmm. But once you split it up between 6 couples,
we're doing,
it's like $150 a person.
in a few weeks for my kid's birthday. That's what we're doing. We're going to the beach and we rented a condo and we're all just kind of going. But they also know, like, okay, Mel's going to be the first one to bed. And they stay up. And it doesn't, like, they just know that that's how I am. Yeah. But I will be the first one up in the morning making them coffee and breakfast. And they love it, you know? So it's just kind of like we have that. I guess you have to figure out your own.
Yeah, you have to figure out who you travel well with.
Yes, for sure.
It's hard. It's hard to get eight friends together to go do something.
Yes.
I had a free trip one time that I won. This was 2007. It was to stay in these villas on the side of the mountain in Puerto Vallarta. It was all expenses paid. We had a chef. Somebody cleaned our rooms every day.
Wow.
It was wonderful. Do you know that I couldn't find people to go?
Why?
Because
they didn't want to travel with you?
Maybe.
I'm just kidding.
I don't know. That could be it.
Maybe.
But no, that wasn't it. We just couldn't. It's just so hard to get somebody to commit to doing something like that.
Yes,
especially
it is.
I was 27 years old. I know if somebody offered me, I probably would have turned it down at that age. I wanted to work. If somebody offered you a trip to Puerto Vallarta, let's say it was a month from now.
Okay.
You only had to pay for your plane ticket, and it was six of your good friends.
But
they hadn't gotten commitments from everybody yet. Would you go?
Can I bring my kids?
Well, that's a good question. I'm going to say no.
Then no.
Mm.
It's
hard to get friends together.
Yeah.
I was in Houston, and a friend of mine asked if Thibodeau was near Homer.
Homer?
Said, what's Homer?
Yeah, what's Homer?
And he said, what's right by Thibodeau? How do you not know? And I said, oh, Homa?
Homa.
And he was like, yeah, I just figured it was Homer that people don't pronounce their R's down there.
There's no R.
Well, you went to Vanderbilt High School, right?
I did.
It's not Vanderbilt.
No, there's no R in there.
Why is that?
I don't know.
And isn't it ironic
that
people drop their R's anyway. So if it were Vanderbilt, they'd probably say Vanderbilt.
Maybe so. Yeah. Yeah.
And Homa is about as south as you can go.
Pretty much. Well, Montague's a little bit further south. That's where my husband's from.
Okay. So Thibodeau is about an hour southwest of New Orleans.
Yes.
Which is where Nichols State is.
Yes.
And then Homa is probably
south of
another
that.
20 minutes south.
Yes.
And you're saying that there's
more.
Oh, there is?
No, there's different bayous. When you get
bayous.
To Homa, yeah. When you get to Homa, you can go down different bayous, okay? So there's like Dularge.
Dulac.
Dulac.
Montague. What else?
Montague. Chauvin.
I've heard Pawnee.
I
used to go fishing in the Pawnee.
Yeah. So that's, you could choose what bayou you go down. So that's how you go south. But you have to choose which south you go.
My friend's dad, Mr. Robert, used to take us to Pawnee, and I was so impressed that he could navigate it without a map or anything.
Oh, yeah.
Because it all looks the same, right? Maybe it's changed.
No, I know. Yeah. I could get us there without a map, but I mean, you mean in a boat?
Yeah. It was like,
my husband could do that. I can't do that.
He knew.
Yeah.
What felt like the 13th left to me and then the 8th right and then the 2nd left.
You get used to it if you drive it all the time.
Yeah, I guess.
We go crabbing down in Pawnee.
Troll fishing, crabbing, shrimping all day long. That's awesome. It's a way of life down here.
I feel like that could be a song.
The same crew that I just mentioned, Brett Bolello's cousin. We used to go to Grand Isle when I was like 10, 11, 12, and we would just make up songs. And that's where that song came from. Troll, fish, and crab, and shrimp, and all day.
I was about to say, it sounds like a song.
It's got a little jingle to it.
It does.
Marketers use jingles on purpose because
I was going to say, that could be a jingle to your podcast.
Like if I went, ba-da-ba-ba-ba, everybody knows what that
I'm
is.
I'm loving it.
Yeah.
That's
intentional. It's deliberate. The da-da-da-da-da, because they know it sticks. It resonates. People remember it.
Like Folgers.
Like Folgers in your cup. Mm-hmm. What's the jingle?
Da-na-na-na-na. I don't know. Cut that out.
Are you a Folgers drinker?
No. Community coffee.
Really?
Yes.
Somebody told me recently that community is like the Folgers of South Louisiana.
And community
they were trying to say it was cheap.
Really?
That's what they said.
Oh, I love community.
I like it, too. I bought a 46-ounce bag of community coffee, the breakfast blend, at Costco for $14.99.
What?
Yeah.
How far is Costco from here? We don't have a Costco.
It's a 15-minute drive towards Baton Rouge. You take the Carrollton exit. I'll always be a Costco member. It's one of those things, once you start, it's just so hard to give that
We don't have one of those.
I get so much stuff.
We have Rouse's. We have DeRouse.
Yeah. Rouse's is...
DeRouse.
It's as much favored by people down here as HEB is in Texas.
Oh, yeah. HEB's big.
The reason people like HEB
Is there fajita meat?
Yeah, that's one of them. Another reason is when you swipe your frequent customer card, they're collecting all kinds of data about your behavior and all that.
Yes.
Well, HEB doesn't require a loyalty card.
Oh.
People like that.
I was not aware.
Is not wanting something just as good as having it?
So I'm trying to... Yes. I think. Because...
You'd be the first person to say yes.
Why? Everybody else says... If you don't want it, I don't know. I'm kind of confused by this. Ask me the question again. I don't have
it. Is not wanting something just as good as having it?
Yeah, because I think you're already there. Like, you've gotten it. But I guess the journey, I can see why they would say yes, because it's in the journey, too. But a lot of people don't enjoy the journey. A lot of people are like, oh, I just want to get to the end, right? Mm-hmm. And then they're going to enjoy it, but they don't. So you need to enjoy the journey, whether you have it or not.
Yeah, I think all the time about someday this is going to be the good old days.
It will.
I always think
it will be.
Yeah.
But you just got to keep.
It's gratitude.
Yes.
That should be taught in school.
Agreed.
Gratitude.
So that's what I share with your wife, the Love Your Life podcast, because I was like, it talks about not just saying you're grateful, but really kind of focusing and attracting good things into your life based on what you think. So you have to change your thoughts. Like, yeah, I could walk around here being upset that I have to pay for the school. And, like, I could harp on how much I do. Anybody could do that. But I think the people that set themselves apart are the ones that focused on the good things that they have. And that attracts actually more good things to you, because you start recognizing, okay, this is what I appreciate. This is what I want. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if I'm articulating this correctly.
I think you did well. I just sent a book to a student of mine called As a Man Thinketh by James Allen. If you're wanting
to write this down.
Deliberately change your thoughts, that is a great book to start with. It's an oldie but goodie. Probably written in the 1930s, just like How to Win Friends and just like Think and Grow Rich.
Have you read The Magic?
No.
Okay, it's similar to, it's a sequel to The Law of Attraction. But that really got me thinking, you need to read that. I need to get you that, The Magic. Like, you write a check to yourself, and then you start visualizing this money that's, and you start being grateful for everything you have. And it's just like practicing, and it basically teaches you how to manifest what you want and attract more of the things that you're into and looking at. And
I was in college. And when I woke up and one morning, we were in a hotel room. I remember thinking intently that I was going to go 4 for 4, which is you have 4 at-bats in a game, you get 4 hits. And I did.
Did it freak you out?
It made me want to do it again. I could not do it. And I don't know what the lesson is in there. Like, I tried to go to the same place. I tried to think intently. Like, what was I doing that day? Why did that work? And I promise it's the first time that I had ever really done it. But I couldn't replicate. I mean, obviously, you can't go 4 for 4 every game. But I don't know. I tried different things. Like, okay, today I'm going to get 2 doubles.
So it's not like immediate. Like, it's not like immediate. That's what this is saying. That's what that podcast does. Is like, there's a time lapse between what you put out into the universe and what you get back. It's your energy attracts like energy.
Yeah.
And so even if you start to doubt it a little bit, well, like, this analogy is you pick up both ends of the stick. So if you pick up a stick, you're picking up both ends. So you're picking up positive and you're picking up negative, right? Mm-hmm. But it's what you think about is what you're going to attract. So if I'm like, oh, well, I'm going to make an A or whatever on this test. But then you start doubting yourself, even though you don't like vocalize it or anything, but you've thought about that. Well, then that doubt, that has energy too. See what I'm saying? So you really need to try to train yourself to think of the positive energy, the positive things, and not say, oh, well, it didn't happen, so how can this happen again? See what I'm saying? Because that's a different energy.
Yes. And I do think it is like bathing. You have to revisit this sort of thing frequently.
Often.
Because you will drift. I used to ride around with The Power of Positive Thinking in my car by Norman Vincent Peale. And one of the primary phrases in the book is, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And so it's kind of a quote that you can internalize and use to psych yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame that people don't have these sort of tools
yes.
at their disposal.
I think they do. You just got to know where to get them.
Yeah, some people aren't even going to search for
them. No, they're not.
Which is unfortunate.
That's why I posted that post the other day. Like, these are my top podcasts if you're interested. I listen to that one of them every day, at least. And I go walk, like you said. And that's what I listen to whenever I go walk. And that's like my me time.
Do you feel like you're going to miss out on quality thoughts because you're always listening to something when you walk? Because walking
yeah,
is like
sometimes
showering.
I don't. Sometimes I don't listen. Sometimes I just go walk.
It's hard, right?
Yeah, but like, I'm trying to do the...
I used to not listen to anything when I exercise, and now that I do, it's hard to exercise without it.
I'm trying to do the like the power of now. Like, I'm trying to be more present. Because that's, in this world, that's hard. That's difficult. Like, the guy that checked his phone, like, it's difficult to not do it, you know? So you're like... trying to be more present, especially I have ADHD, and so my brain's kind of all over the place. And so I'm in, no, but I mean, I probably should. No,
nothing,
no, but I should.
When we first had our child, I found myself not remembering like a second task. If I was given or wanted to do something in addition to something I planned to do, I would forget that second thing, and that was a new thing for me, and I didn't know if. You know, I'm 40 I didn't know what it was. And I talked to my doctor about it. Well, first I talked to some friends about it. Come to find out, like, 5 of my top 8 friends are not only doing it themselves, but they're like, oh, yeah, and my staff uses it. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is so prevalent. So I talked to my doctor about it, and he was like, let's monitor it. You don't want to get on anything just yet. And anyway, so I do feel like I've gotten better. What my doctor believed was that it was, although I don't feel stressed, it's just the added stress into your life.
Yeah, a lot of things going on. Your kid, when you have kids.
Yeah, but I like to think there are 7 billion people walking around. Everybody has been through this.
You're right. It's the way you manage it and look at.
Yeah. If I gave you a chance to ask one question of me, what would it be?
I kind of already asked you this whenever you came talk in my class, but it was your favorite place that you visited.
So I've been to about 60 countries. So
right.
It's tough to say, and it depends on what you're after. Like, if you were looking for a recommendation, if I had to go back to a place for 30 days tomorrow, it would be Bali.
Okay.
We love the island of Bali. It's lush. You feel healthier there, healthy yet energized. The people are really sincere, genuine people. It's not expensive. You can take a scooter around everywhere you want to go.
That's how Key West is, kind of sounds like.
Yeah.
Have you been there?
No.
Oh, you need to go.
I will.
You can take a scooter. We got 2 scooter tickets.
I love scooters.
Make sure you park them in the right spot. Yeah. They have scooter parking. We were not aware.
The other thing about Bali is a lot of the rooms, you have a little splash pool to go with it.
Oh, nice.
Like a honeymoon sort of place. It's a lot, like a high percentage of hotel rooms have that.
How expensive is Bali?
Not
much. The flights.
Yeah, and it takes 22 hours to get there.
Yeah, oh, wow.
It's a very popular honeymoon spot. But if you can spend a month there, it is wonderful. The other thing is the food is good and it's cheap, and in a lot of hotels they have room service. In fact, everywhere I've probably stayed in 10 different places there, they have room service. It's also diverse in that you can get the jungle experience, like in a place called Ubud, but then an hour to the south or the west you'll get the beach experience.
Very cool.
Bali, Indonesia. Okay, I think we have done over 2 hours. Can you believe it?
That is crazy.
I know. How can people connect with you online if they would like to reach you?
They can find me on LinkedIn. That's how you found me, right?
Yes.
You saw that I was sharing. I share jobs for my students on there all the time.
Awesome.
So LinkedIn's probably the best place for people to find me, because that's kind of where I post jobs and updates and stuff like that. So that's probably be where. So probably LinkedIn.
Okay, and if somebody wanted to get a painting like this pelican, where would they go?
Oh, they can go on Instagram or Facebook, Brushed by Boudreaux, B-R-U-S-H-E-D, Brushed by Boudreaux. That's me.
And your husband has a website too?
He does. His is Original Design Woodworking. That's his Facebook. Original Design Woodworking.
Got it. Melanie, really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, me too. Thank you so much. It was so fun.
Friends, I appreciate you listening. I realize you could be doing anything in the world, but you chose to spend your time with us. Thank you. If you enjoyed this episode with Melanie, please copy the link and share it with a friend. I can be reached on Instagram and Twitter at @man_overseas. Thank you, folks.